Hi, this is Ruth McCauley returning with our second half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, June 2nd. We begin with some of the funeral notices that appear in the Decatur Herald and Review. Delvin Frederick BM4, 74, of Forsyth, passed away on Saturday, May 28th at his home. Following the wishes of the family, cremation services will be provided by Graceland Fairlawn Crematory. Memorials may be directed to the Children's Miracle Network or Homeward Bound Animal Shelter. Moran and Goebel Funeral Home and Cremation Services at 2801 North Monroe Street, Decatur, is in charge of the arrangements. Essie Pearl Wyckoff Hicks went quietly to heaven in her sleep May 31st. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. on Friday, that's tomorrow, June 3rd, at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur. Graveside services and burial will be at 3:30 p.m. Friday, June 3rd, at Ware's Grove Cemetery in Butler, Illinois. There are no indication of where one might send memorial donations. Dorothy Eileen Clark, 95, formerly of Decatur, passed away peacefully at 4:40 p.m. Sunday, May 29th, at St. Paul's home in Belleville, Illinois, with her daughters by her side. According to her wishes, private family services will be held. There will be no visitation. Graveside services will be held. We're being held today at 12:30, Thursday, June 2nd, at Graceland Cemetery. Burial was scheduled to follow in the cemetery. Arrangements were handled by George Renner and Sons Funeral Home in Belleville. John Hess, better known as Kookie, departed this life on May 26th. Kookie was born December 3rd, 1949, the third of 10 children in Brownsville, Tennessee. Visitation will be held tomorrow, June 3rd, at Walker Funeral Chapel, 566 North Water, from 6 to 8 p.m. Services celebrating his life will be held on Saturday, June 4th at noon, with visitation an hour prior at Main Street Church, 2000 North Main Street. Burial will be in Graceland following those services. Professional services have been entrusted to the Walker Funeral Service. Wade B. Witz, 71, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, May 29th at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Graveside services to celebrate Wade's life will begin at 9:30. Oh, jeepers, I'm sorry, I just realized this has already occurred. We're held at 9:30 today in Macon County Memorial Park. The family of Wade Witz was served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. John Byron Brown, 66, of Booty, Illinois, passed away on Tuesday, May 31st, at his residence, surrounded by his loved ones. Graveside services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, June 3rd, at Brown Cemetery in Booty, followed by a memorial service at 11:30 a.m. at Zion Chapel United Methodist Church in Booty. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Homes in Decatur are assisting the family with the arrangements. Michael L. Mike Thornton, 69, of Newberry, Florida, passed away on Tuesday, May 31st at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Mike's wishes for cremation will be arranged by Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel. Rex M. Carroll, 79, of Ramsey, Illinois, passed away on Monday, May 30th at Memorial Medical Center in Springfield. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 4th at Ramsey Christian Church with Pastor Terry Sapp officiating. Burial will follow at Ramsey Cemetery with military rites. Visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. on Friday, June 3rd at Ramsey Christian Church with Masonic rites at 7 p.m. Visitation will also be 1 hour prior to the service on Saturday. Memorial donations may be made to the Ramsey Fire Department First Responders in Ramsey, Illinois. Marjorie Elizabeth Davis, 100, of Mattoon, passed away at 4:15 p.m. on Tuesday, May 31st, at her residence. Funeral services for family and friends will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, June 3rd, that's tomorrow, at Schilling Funeral Home in Mattoon. Burial will follow at Smizer Cemetery. A visitation will be held from noon until time of the service on Friday at the funeral home. Memorial donations in her honor are suggested to the American Cancer Society or the First Baptist Church. Funerals are pending for David K. Eldridge, 81, of Decatur, who died on Tuesday, May 31st. Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home is handling those arrangements. Anna Freeman, 88, of Decatur, who died on Tuesday, May 31st. Walker Funeral Service and Chapel is handling those arrangements. And Anna Mae Frost, 90, of Strasburg, formerly of Rockville, Indiana, who died on Wednesday, June 1st. Howan Yockey Funeral Home in Strasburg is handling those arrangements. We turn now to the opinion page of the Decatur Herald and Review and pick up the editorial piece before we move on to some letters to the editor. The editorial has the headline, Series Will Study Heroin Use in Our Area. Beginning Sunday, the Herald and Review will publish a series of stories about the horrors of heroin, how the drug has continued to infiltrate the lives of people in central Illinois, the stories of people who fought addiction, and what police, counselors, and doctors are trying to do to help. The series is titled Dope Sick, a word users say describes the feeling between highs. It also illustrates the state of heroin use in our community. In recent months, Narcan, a near miracle drug that can bring back the near dead suffering the effects of overdose, has gotten a lot of headlines. What you'll find in our series is that many more people are saved by effective drug prevention. That's why the public must support the work of police, prosecutors, and recovery experts who work hand in hand to fight the availability of illegal drugs and the misuse of prescription medication. In McLean County alone, 11 people died of opioid-related causes last year, and at least 3 people have died so far this year, according to the county coroner's office. 20 years ago, meth made its way east from California to Missouri and then to Illinois. Heroin was a last-ditch drug for an addict. Meth was easy to make and cheap to buy. But heroin use has risen again in recent years, making its way, like meth, to people looking for a fast high without understanding the consequences. Heroin really is a first drug of choice, but its use is becoming very common among middle and upper class users instead of the stereotypical strung out street person. Often users start with another drug, sometimes as simple as alcohol. The numbing effect of one drug impairs judgment and the user moves on to something else, maybe pills, maybe another illegal drug, before moving to meth and powdered heroin, then crystal meth and liquid heroin for greater highs. With help, users can stop and recover, but it will be a daily battle for the rest of their lives. Those on the front lines try to help through providing education and treatment, stopping drug availability, and in some cases, stopping prescription painkillers that can prove a gateway to abuse. All of us have a role to play. If you see someone whose behavior has changed, talk to them or one of their family members. Consult an HR specialist at work, a police officer, your family physician. Be aware that using can lead to lies, theft, job loss, bad grades, lack of interest in something or someone that previously was a focus. Police, first responders, and drug recovery specialists work hard to battle drug problems in our communities, but communities must support their work. We must report suspicious behavior, provide police with the financial and moral support they need to combat the producers, distributors, and sellers, and support specialists with the tools they need to help users. Many lives will be saved by the use of Narcan. Many more will be saved if we support the work of those who fight the problems of illegal drug production and sales. We turn to a couple of letters to the editor. The first is signed by Donna Bishop of Atlanta, and it carries the headline, "We need to salute veterans and take back our country." During World War II, my dad, Vernon Appel, fought in the front lines of the Battle of the Bulge with the 84th Infantry Division of the Rail Splitters under the command of General George Patton. He was wounded in battle and decorated with a Purple Heart. Our military are fighting for the freedom of every American citizen, the freedom of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But unfortunately, in my lifetime, freedoms are quickly being destroyed. Here are just a few of the Supreme Court decisions that have impacted my generation. In the 1960s, prayer and Bible studies were not allowed in public schools. As God was removed from the schools, bullying prevailed and educational learning declined. In 1973, abortion was legalized and many newborns lost their freedom to live, while women lost respect as pornography skyrocketed. In 1980, the Ten Commandments were removed from schools and courtrooms, including Bibles. It's no wonder that our judges cannot distinguish right from wrong anymore, and justice cannot be served. When we lose justice, we lose liberty. In 2015, same-sex marriage was legalized, and according to Janet Porter in Light Winds, while homosexuality has existed throughout society, there has been no other time in the history of man where same-sex marriage was prevalent than in the era of Noah. Perhaps the biggest battle today is on our own soil. It's time for each American citizen to wake up and take a patriotic stand, put God first, uphold the Constitution as the supreme law of the land, and support our veterans. Let freedom ring once more. Again, a letter to the editor signed by Donna Bishop of Atlanta. And our next is signed by Meredith Black of Herrick. Illinois isn't rich and you should pay for child care. My reply to Patricia Casterberry's letter to the editor on May 24th. Why do you think the state should pay for your child care? Where is the father to your kids? Why isn't he paying for their care? As far as Illinois being one of the richest states, what gave you that idea? Illinois hasn't paid its bills in years. The schools haven't been paid all of what they should have been paid, but have to make do with what they get. Why should the taxpayers pay your bills? Wow, I missed that letter to the editor, I guess, from the original lady. This was, again, a letter signed by Meredith Black of Herrick. We turn now to letters to the editor of the Decatur Tribune Online. This first letter is signed by Teresa Chagrin, Animal Care and Control Specialist. with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, in Norfolk, Virginia. Veterinarian shelters entrusted to prevent animal suffering. Dear Editor, a woman in Nebraska recently pleaded no contest to killing her 20-year-old dog by putting the animal in a plastic storage bag. She also allegedly tried to remove a cyst by tying a guitar string around the dog's stomach and trying to cut it off, all because she couldn't afford to take the dog to a veterinarian. This isn't an isolated incident. An Oregon man facing criminal charges for allegedly drowning his ailing 22-year-old cat in a bathtub because he couldn't afford euthanasia at a veterinarian's office. Oh, you know, hold on. I'm going to. This is too graphic for me. I'm an animal lover too, but this is too much. So let's go on to, let's take a break here so real quick. Okay, we're going to take an Osborne Online, it looks like opinion piece here, covered, carrying the headline, Lunch Yield Study on Trash Receptacle Behavior. It was lunchtime, and I pulled in the Taco Bell on East Pershing Road, went inside, bought my lunch, and sat down in a booth in the southwest corner of the restaurant. It was the beginning of an interesting lunch, although I was alone. Located on the other side of the huge glass windows, and only about 6 or 7 feet from where I was sitting, was a trash receptacle. The trash receptacle was part of the drive-through lane so that when someone had a wrapper or something else to throw away, he or she could stop at the receptacle and drop the trash without even getting out of the car. It's not even a long reach from a car window. It takes no effort and only about a second or two to use. Here's the interesting part of my lunch besides the great tacos. I started watching how many drivers stopped at the trash receptacle and made a deposit. During the 15 or 20 minutes that I was eating lunch, most of the drivers who received their orders at the drive-through window kept on driving. Either they did not have any trash, they were taking the trash home with them, or they didn't see the trash container, which, if it was the latter case, with such poor eyesight, they shouldn't have even been driving a car. What I found most interesting in my lunch research project, not government funded, was the kind of vehicles people drove who did or did not use the trash receptacle. A young guy who was driving a car that looked to be in such bad shape that I was surprised it made the trip through the drive-through lane stopped the car, the brakes still worked, and carefully threw his trash into the receptacle. Good for him. The condition of his car did not reflect on his concern about putting his trash into the proper place and not leaving it strewn all over the drive-through lane. Besides, maybe because of financial problems, the old car was all he could afford. The other extreme of what I had witnessed was the young guy in the old car. I'm sorry I'm having such problems reading today. I don't know what my problem is. The other extreme of what I had witnessed with the young guy in the old car happened a short time later with a middle-aged man driving an expensive, fairly new blue car with a darker blue roof cover. He pulled up to where it appeared he was going to throw something in the trash receptacle, and then, within a foot of the receptacle, he dropped his trash on the ground next to it. I assume with a shot accuracy like that, he didn't go to college on a basketball scholarship. The man in the blue car then drove off as if nothing had happened, leaving his trash on the ground. The man may have been driving a big expensive car, but the sensitivity to littering part of his brain was nothing but a junker with bald tires. Of course, no conclusion should be drawn about those two people as setting some kind of standard. People who litter come in all sizes, shapes, and forms. Littering crosses all economic boundaries. I'm just reporting two examples. Overall, during the time I was eating my lunch, I found of those people who needed to throw out trash from their vehicles, most of them made a conscious effort to put the trash inside instead of outside the trash receptacle. I know that Taco Bell and other fast food restaurants have employees who clean the trash out of the drive-through lane, and that was starting to happen before I left Taco Bell. However, I think knowing that your trash will be cleaned up by someone if you throw it on the ground should not be an excuse for littering. Depositing it in the trash receptacle is a solid habit and great example to young children. The worst offender of throwing trash on a drive-through lane is the person that starts throwing trash out of his car before he ever gets to the window to get his order. That's imported trash. Don't we have enough imported products without importing trash? Recently, when I was in a drive-through lane, a young woman started throwing trash out of her car before she got to the window to pick up her order. And I had to wonder if she had picked up all that trash at other fast food restaurants and was leaving all of it in this location. I know we have a lot more important issues to confront in our community today, but not littering is something that should be as easy as breathing. Besides, if you throw your trash in appropriate receptacles, you don't have to worry whether there's a newspaper editor in town who will be watching you and who is going to write about you in his next column. Beware if you litter. You have been warned. The Tribune Taco Trash Man may be watching you and your trashy ways in drive-through lanes of Decatur. Continuing on Paul Or Osborne's City Beat column, we pick up an item where he writes, Decatur's unemployment rate has jumped dramatically, along with all other metropolitan areas in Illinois, for the third consecutive month, according to preliminary data released by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, that's BLS, and the Illinois Department of Employment Security, that's IDES. Decatur unemployment rate in April 2016 was 7.1%, compared to 5.9% for April 2015, an increase of 1.2%. Illinois is tied for the highest unemployment rate in the nation, even though in prior months some areas have experienced relatively low unemployment rates, said IDES Director Jeff Mays. This is the first time since January 2010 that every county has had over-the-year increases in their unemployment rate. This is significant in helping to determine true economic conditions across all regions of the state, end quote. The unemployment rate identifies those who are out of work and looking for work and is not tied to collecting unemployment insurance benefits, which means the unemployment rate is even higher when everyone is included in determining the rate. Well, that's a bit of grim news. The next item, the Black Chamber of Commerce hosted a farewell tribute to outgoing Decatur Police District Decatur School District Superintendent Lisa Taylor at the public library last Thursday, which was an emotional event for Taylor and those who attended. The majority of the Board of Education unofficially decided not to renew her contract, even though she had met and exceeded all goals that the board had set for her. She starts her new job in the Hayworth School District next month, and another visionary in our community is forced from her job and moves on. During the time that Taylor served as superintendent, I did not receive one negative letter to the editor, phone call, or email about the job she was doing, and believe me, that's never happened with anyone in that position. I believe that four members of the school board made a really bad decision, considering about everybody else in the community thought and thinks so highly of Taylor. Best wishes to Lisa in her new position. She will always do well in any position she takes in the future. We turn now to the money section of the Decatur Herald and Review and pick up an article here from Clinton that's all over the news this morning, although this may be a little out of date. It is written by Edith Brady Looney, a Lee News Service writer. Clinton braces for possible shutdown of nuclear plant. If Exelon goes ahead with the threatened closure of the Clinton Power Station, which pays $15 million in property taxes each year, local taxpayers and public services would be devastated, according to representatives of taxing bodies in DeWitt County. We have been analyzing the loss of jobs, revenue from sales and property taxes, and any other resources that could be impacted, Clinton City Administrator Tim Folliwell said on Wednesday. Exelon has said it would close nuclear plants near Clinton and the Quad Cities if the state did not enact this spring what it calls the Next Generation Power Plan. The General Assembly ended its spring session Tuesday without passing the legislation. At this time, the future of the Next Generation Energy Plan remains unclear, Exelon said in a statement issued Wednesday. We'll have more to say about the path forward within the next few days. And just as an aside, my understanding is this morning they announced that they would be closing both plants here in sometime in 2017. Exelon had previously said the Clinton plant would remain open until June 1, 2017, but its operation beyond then hinged upon passage of the legislation. Local government officials are working to develop responsible solutions that protect taxpayers from a steep and sudden increase in taxes, said Folliwell, noting that raising existing property tax rates to their maximum legal levels would not cover the losses. We have to figure out how to stay within our means. The bottom line is we have to adjust to the new norm, said the city administrator. Clinton schools could see the biggest impact with a loss of $6.6 million, more than half the district's budget, and the county would lose $938,000, according to city estimates. Exelon has said the legislation will put its nuclear plants on an even footing with other low-carbon emission energy sources, such as wind and solar power, that receive subsidies. The bill also would establish a surcharge on utility customers that would help the nuclear plants, which Exelon said have lost more than $800 million over the past 7 years, and change how some consumer rates are calculated. While supporters have said keeping the plants online would prevent a spike in power costs, consumer groups and others have called it a bailout for a profitable company. The battle over financial assistance for Exelon heated up in recent months as groups supporting nuclear power sparred publicly with those who oppose sharing wind and solar subsidies with Exelon. In a statement Tuesday, Michael Schellenberger with the Environmental Progress Illinois accused the Environmental Law and Policy Center with working with other groups to kill nuclear in Illinois. Unless something changes, Illinois will go backward on air pollution, climate change, and green jobs, said Schellenberger. The Environmental Law and Policy Center said through its spokesman, David Jakubiak, that environmental groups that make up the Clean Jobs Coalition, quote, had constructive conversations with Exelon aimed at modernizing the state's outmoded energy policy, end quote, and is encouraged that the two sides have found some common ground. The coalition is Macaulay, and I've enjoyed it today. Hope you have too. I look forward to seeing you again next week. Till then, you all take care. Article talks about ADM in Effingham. This is an article written by Chris Lisvardi, an H&R staff writer. ADM plans to expand Effingham facility. Archer Daniels Midland Company announced plans Wednesday to transform a warehouse in Effingham into a new pet food and livestock premix plant. The 284,000 square foot food grade warehouse will replace ADM's current three facilities in the city. This is a substantial expansion and improvement to our already significant pet food capabilities, said Brent Fenton, president of ADM Animal Nutrition. The state-of-the-art facility with industry-leading technology will give us tremendous capabilities to meet a wide variety of customer needs, not just today, but in the years and decades to come, as industry standards for quality and process controls continue to evolve. This facility will be located at 1200 McGrath Avenue inside the Effingham Industrial Park. The building previously was used in the production of plastic bottles by Southeastern Container, which closed late last year.